Lowe's knows that no matter your paint project, saving is at the top of your list. That's why when you shop today, you can buy one, get one free select Valspar and HGTV Home by Sherwin-Williams one-coat coverage interior paints via rebate. Shop these deals in-store or online today at Lowe's. We help, you save. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. Discount taken at time of purchase. See sales associate for details. Offer valid 8/21 through 9/3.
Welcome to the Boneyard with Steve Robertson. As always, I am your good friend and host, Steve Robertson, here on the Hump Day edition of the Yard. It's been a busy day already. You know, it's football season time when you guys start stacking radio interviews in the morning. And so here we are. I'd rather talk to all of you, but the reality of it is it's part of the gig, man. That's what we've worked for. I want to thank everybody for having us on. Got a chance to visit with our buddy Bo Bounds today in person over at the Seal Complex in advance of our media opportunities. And I'll tell you this, we've had a lot of player interviews, for sure. A lot. And today we got Blake Chapin again and Seydou Traore again. And speaking of Seydou, you know, we had to sit out last year because of the transfer rule. But we have a lot of back-channel chatter that he is going to be a real difference maker in this offense this year. That's one of the reasons, you know, we've already had him twice in camp. That's a guy right now that, if provided he stays healthy, this is a guy that your fans and your friends and your kids are going to be talking about. Excited about that room. The Ball brothers have been very good. I think Justin Ball is a great ball player as well. But Seydou is a name to remember. And again, it's kind of like a forgotten guy because, again, he was a portal guy in 2023 and had to sit out a full year because it was his second transfer. And so I think sometimes our fans kind of forget about him. But once you see him on that field and you see how athletic he is, I mean, this is a guy that's got NFL potential. A lot of people said he was a top tight end in the portal last year. Ends up at Mississippi State. And because of the factors like, hey, you know, we're going to need tight ends rebuilding the room. He got to work out and practice and things like that. He just couldn't play. Now his time is coming. And I think you all should go ahead and kind of get excited about that. Because, we, you know, last year the tight end room was much, much different, right? We had to kind of rebuild the tight end room and you had some guys kind of playing out of position. It's a little different this year. You know, went out and signed a couple tight ends out of the portal, and then you already had one coming back. So that room, in many respects, has kind of been rejuvenated and renovated. But I suspect that the top tight end, statistically, at the end of the year, is going to be Seydou. I think it's important to kind of go ahead and identify that right now. A lot of people suggest privately that he had a really good scrimmage, graded out really well. Still some room for improvement, but a guy that I think everybody's going to be excited about halfway through the year. That's a real mismatch too. You know, getting a guy like him with his size, you know, he's a little bit too big, you know, for defensive backs. He's a little bit too quick for a lot of linebackers. Of course, in this league, there are some guys that can really run and cover. But that guy's a walking mismatch. And I'm eager to see how Jeff Lebby uses him. He could be a guy, honestly, he might have the most catches on the team when it's all said and done. Just kind of be mindful of that. And you can watch that video interview today for free over at jeanspage.com. Of course, we've got some VIP content. But again, all the big room stuff is free. The Seydou interview is up. I guess Blake Chapin is now up. And before the day is over, we'll have our other interview up as well, which was Kevon Lee, a running back. The first running back that we've talked to in preseason camp. Talked to some guys, you know, Jeffrey Pittman and Kevon back during the spring. But Kevon, the first running back to speak in preseason camp. So be sure and check all that out. Again, that's for free. You should be a member of jeanspage.com. If you're not, you can still go over there. Your number one source for Mississippi State information. And one of the things that we do, and I take a lot of pride in this, is we post today's news today. Like, we had three interviews today. Well, they're going to all be posted today. We'll have another interview tomorrow. Tomorrow we're going to have an opportunity to speak to Mississippi State football strength and conditioning coach Shad Williams. played at the same high school as Jeff Levy. Played for Jeff Levy's father. And so we'll have an opportunity to speak to him. We were going to have players again tomorrow, but Coach Levy kind of called an audible with us and said, hey, I want Coach Williams to have a chance to speak to the media before, you know, we get into the year. Because once you get into the season, you know, it's, you know, we want to talk about things that are relevant to that game week and that kind of stuff. But looking forward to that. Looking forward to having a chance to speak to Coach Williams. And so, again, you can expect that tomorrow for free over at jeanspage.com. Hey, let's thank our friends at Bulldog Burger Company. It's not free, but it feels like it, right? Because you get more than your money's worth at Bulldog Burger Company. One of the things that I love about Bulldog Burger Company, obviously there's the atmosphere and all the things that go along with that, but you get more than you pay for. There's so many people out there kind of post-COVID. They're like, well, hey, you know, we got to make this money back. And so we're going to give you less for more. Like, we're going to charge you maybe a couple bucks more, and then we're going to give you a couple bucks less. And they're hoping you're not going to notice. But there is pricing integrity at Bulldog Burger Company. I love that about them. It says a lot about the leadership, management, and ownership of that organization. The portions have never wavered at any point. You love it. You get that great restaurant quality hamburger, and there's so many to choose from. And again, the comeback burger, only going to be around for a couple more weeks. I am still advocating for that to be a permanent item on the menu. Matter of fact, I'm going to have it tomorrow. Yeah, not sure if it's a lunch or a dinner item for me, but I'm going to have it tomorrow. That's a plan anyway. Now, whether it's the comeback burger, the freshman 15, the bulldog, the Pimentology, add bacon, which is the Boneyard burger of choice, you're going to get full. Whether you get the fries, the onion rings, the side salad, I don't know what you're choosing to do with your life, but I know no matter what your taste buds are craving, you can get it satisfied at Bulldog Burger Company. Those Sloppy Joe sliders, what a great, great, great lunch portion that is. Three great locations to serve you: University Drive in Stark Vegas, Gloucester Street there in Tupelo, Lake Harbor Drive in the Ridge and Flowood area. Have the spring rolls as your appetizer. They'll make you and everybody around you better looking. Get the chocolate shake to go, and you can ride that ride home with a smile, partner. Bulldog Burger Company, a place where people go to meet. M-E-A-T. All right, let's take a little time now and talk about the Bulldog defensive line. I'll be honest with you, and maybe my concerns are misplaced, but this is probably the personnel group that I am probably the most worried about on the entire roster. Those are my feelings, and hopefully they'll subside. Those concerns maybe will be alleviated as we get a little deeper into the season. But I'm worried a little bit about the defensive line, especially in a run-first league like this. The first item of concern for me is even back in in December, when we met with Jeff Levy about the signing class, you kind of, hey, what are your needs kind of going forward? He goes, we really need an edge out of the portal, and we weren't able to get one. We weren't able to get one that was capable of playing in the SEC that wanted to play here. Does it make sense? We've had some guys that wanted to come here, but there were some concerns, obviously, about their ability to kind of navigate through, you know, the gauntlet that is the Southeastern Conference. And that's the one thing when I look back and say, you know what, hey, I thought we had a good class as far as meeting our needs. That's one need that I think it's pretty safe to say we didn't meet. Now, all of that understood, we did get a few guys out of the portal to help up front. Suleiman Paka, it's spelled K-P-A-K-A. But it's pronounced Paka. The K is silent. The first K is silent. But everybody calls him Pak. He was a rotation guy at Purdue. Some people have said some good things about him. He's had some flashes. I do think he is a two-deeper, provided that everybody else is healthy. Probably we'll see him at some time, maybe rotating with the first group. But, you know, big, wide-bodied guy, 6'3", 300. Kind of that typical square-body, three-tech type physique. But not a ton of production at Purdue. Very popular guy at Purdue. I know when he committed to Mississippi State, I heard from one of our guys that covers Purdue, and they made mention that he was kind of a fan and staff favorite because he is such a good guy. But at the end of the day, we maybe need good guys on the team and in the locker room, but we need trained assassins on the field. And I'm not going to sit here and, you know, be critical of his ability. We hadn't had a chance to see him much, but going to need him to be good. And then you think, okay, is he a 15 to 20 snaps a game guy? Is that where he is? Or, you know, does he kind of work his way into more repetitions? Because remember, Calvin Dinkins and Trevion Williams, and we'll talk about them a little bit, you know, those guys missed the majority of the year last year. So are they going to be game ready? Not sure. Again, that's part of my concern. Now, your leader is Demonte Russell. And Demonte obviously has been here a long time. I joked earlier today on the radio that, you know, most people are doctors that have been in school as long as he has. But you remember Demonte was part of that that group that had a very serious car accident, and he missed a year, got the medical year. I think he wanted to go pro last year, and the feedback probably didn't support that decision. You know, so he's back. But, you know, Demonte is a guy, too. It showed some flashes last year. We really need him to maybe live up to his recruiting potential, especially with the fact that we don't have another edge that's fresh to the program. But Demonte is a guy that people respect. He is a guy that you know, certainly has the physique to play in the Southeastern Conference, has the length. We need him to realize his full potential this year. And so you go from him kind of being, you know, a rotation guy last year to now he has to kind of be the guy. Kedrick Bingley-Jones, another guy we got from the portal, a guy that was highly recruited out of high school, played for Providence Day High School in North Carolina. And a lot of schools in the ACC wanted him. And my attitude's always been, like, Mac Brown is a guy, too. Been a great recruiter for many, many years. And so if Mac wants him, I kind of want him, too. But he goes there. Things don't maybe go the way they expect. But he's come here. Where's number 22? And, again, we've heard some good things about him. You know, David Turner had a relationship with him that kind of predated his entrance into the portal. But he is a guy, they call him KJ. We hear a lot of that mentioned from the offensive lineman about, hey, this guy's pretty tough, you know. 6'4", 310 pounds, you know. So he has the measurables that you want. And, again, came here kind of highly regarded as a recruit, but not a ton of production in North Carolina. Now, is that a product of, you know, maybe some guys ahead of him were a little more talented? You know, maybe the change of scenery will be good for him, but we need him to be a guy. And kind of like Pocket, is he a 15 to 20 snap guy, or is he going to get more? Is he double that? You know, I don't know how they're going to divide the snaps up among the rotation, but he's certainly a two deeper and probably in some situations could run with the first team. He certainly has the size and the athleticism to do it. But you know, we kind of got to get it going here. Trevion Williams, again, they're going to be very careful with him. You know, he missed the year last year, you know, got hurt early in the year, and it feels like he's been banged up ever since. I'm told he hadn't done a lot of team stuff. And again, a lot of that is just kind of getting him back into football shape. But, he's not 100%. You know, we talked to him last week, but it's evident in the viewing periods that we've had when they have gone to – we hadn't seen full team stuff, but they have been some, you know, some OL versus DL type stuff, and he hasn't taken any reps that I've seen. And, of course, I'm not watching that personnel group the whole time. But that tells me that he's not quite 100%. Now, again, you're going to take every precaution possible considering what's happened with him in the last couple of years. You know, he's a guy that's been cut on a few times, and you hope it all kind of comes together this year. Arguably our most talented defensive lineman. But if we talk about the best ability is availability. Calvin Dinkins, similar situation. Thought a lot of Calvin out of Lake High School. He was a guy, a bit of a late bloomer. Florida was trying to get him in for a visit. Mississippi State was able to get him committed. He didn't take that visit to Florida. But 6'2", 315 pounds, another guy with that square body type. Big barrel-chested guy, kind of a country strong guy. So kind of curious to see, you know, what's his availability this year. You know, he's a guy, you know, there's sometimes you call guys you can't get right? They just can't seem to get right. And so I hope that Calvin can shake that label and be a guy that Bulldogs can count on this year. Joseph Head Sr., one of the first commitments in his class, a redshirt freshman, a guy that, you know, could be an edge type guy, and we need him to kind of take a step forward. He's a guy from Holmes County Central High School. You know, we've had some success down there. But Joseph was a guy, obviously, that, you know, kind of grew up a Mississippi State guy. We expected him to come here. It wasn't a surprise that he came. Just a redshirt freshman. You know, so it's not like, hey, well, you know, we're 3 years into this thing. Maybe we misevaluated him. No, I mean, I think now is kind of the time for him to kind of take a step up here and begin to kind of get in that rotation and get some snaps, some meaningful snaps in ball games. We have heard a ton, and I mean a ton, of positive praise about true freshman defensive lineman Kai McClendon. Now, you may recall Kai McClendon, a late prospect in the class last year. He was an offensive lineman much of his high school career. They flip him over because he's a little quick twitch guy, make him a defensive lineman, and he was absolutely unblockable at times. Ends up being Mississippi-Alabama all-star guy, being an all-state guy, a guy that kind of made himself as a senior and give his high school coaches a lot of credit for kind of identifying, and hey, this guy may be playing a little bit out of position. But even the older offensive linemen and the experienced defensive linemen have mentioned Kai McClendon as a younger guy that has come in and kind of made a splash. And based on our needs on the interior and based on the fact that, you know, Dink and Trevion have been a little bit injury-prone, and the fact that you've got, you know, Pac and KJ coming in here that, you know, they haven't had to play starter snaps, I think it's pretty safe to say that Kai McClendon's probably not going to redshirt this year. You know, the whole part of redshirting, and some guys can take that as a slight against them, you know, it's based on team needs, right? If he's not going to play significant snaps, there's no point and putting him out there and wasting a year of eligibility. But I think, again, with State's needs at the position and the fact that Kai has made some noise early on as a freshman, I think you're going to see him play this year. Great young man, too. Had a great time interviewing him. I think that he is a guy that...
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
We'll probably be a fan favorite when it's all said and done. Deontay Anderson, you remember he was part of that COVID class, right? You know, they didn't get a chance to play the All-American Bowl. He was selected, and even though he signed with Mississippi State in December, he held the announcement until a day that was significant to him. I think it was his birthday or his mom's birthday. He'd already signed with us. We kind of sat on it. But he was the guy last year that showed some flashes. Out of Fort Meade Senior High School down in Miami, Florida, you know, he's a guy in that edge role that could be a guy. Again, not a Montez Sweat guy, but a guy that I think schematically you can find a way to kind of get him out there and make some plays. 6'3", 270, and still pretty rangy. A name to remember. Eric Taylor, former LSU player by way of Southwest Mississippi Community College. Played a little bit for us last year. Consistency was a bit of an issue with him. And again, we start talking about the interior. We've got numbers on the interior. I don't think there's any question. But one of the things that I kind of point out, too, when I discuss this with my friends, is the fact that Kai McClendon is the interior guy we're hearing the most about is not just a testament to Kai, but it's kind of an indictment on the returning guys, right? Because, you know, hey, you shouldn't have a true freshman to come in here and kind of upstage you a little bit. And so I think that's a challenge for David Turner. You know, I remember, you know, when my oldest, Ani, began to play, he played high school baseball the summer after his eighth grade year, going into his freshman year, played with his high school team. And I remember Coach Greer kind of using him to kind of motivate the rest of the team, saying, hey, you don't start working hard, I'm going to have a dadgum freshman taking your spot. I'm sure David Turner is having some of those same conversations. And again, Kai McClendon probably shouldn't be in a position to challenge. But you've had some injuries, and you've had some guys that maybe haven't developed as you'd hoped, and we're going to put the best kids on the field. And if Kyle McClendon ends up being better than the other guys, then he should start. I don't expect that to happen, but I think it's pretty safe to say you're going to see him. But we need Eric Taylor. You know, Eric Taylor was in all everything coming out of high school, out of Hewitt Trustful High School there in Alabama. You know, there were a lot of people that wanted him, and he goes to LSU, things don't work out, goes to junior college, has a pretty good run there, and now he's here. But, you know, last year when we were all banged up, there was an opportunity for Eric to kind of step up and kind of solidify some things. And I think many of our fans probably aren't even familiar with Eric. True story. So we need him, again, like some of these other guys, step up and, you know, realize their potential and help this team move forward. Corey Clark, of course, the last of the commitments for this class. He was added after a summer workout in June. Did you know that? Yeah. Out of Northeast Mississippi Community College, came here to camp for an offer. He got the offer. And again, 6'4", 3'10", another interior guy. And so it was kind of a questionable take when we took him. Now, he's a guy that picked up some offers back in the spring. Wasn't exactly sure what he was going to do. Very, very grateful to be here, as anybody would be, right? But I'm kind of eager to see. I mean, you know, he didn't get the benefit of spring football. He wasn't part of the team then. And so, you know, how much could we expect from him this year? Now, he could be a rotation guy. He's a junior college guy, obviously. We didn't sign him to redshirt him. You know, so hopefully he can come in here and maybe give you 10 snaps a game. Gabe Moore announced last week that he would be sitting out the season due to some health concerns. Now, I'm told these are not football-related things. It's just something that he's dealing with. We've got a little more inside information on that, but we're not gonna breach his privacy. But there's some things that he's dealing with that, you know, obviously they want him to hang around. But Gabe is a guy, too, that has really put on some weight since getting on campus. You know, he was the guy that needed to. You know, he was big and rangy and a great pass rusher in high school there at Louisville High School. But now he's up at 6'4", 290. I mean, this guy's put on a ton of weight since he's been here, but is not expected to play this year. Now, that could change, obviously. He's already had the redshirt year, so there's nothing that would prevent him. So let's say, hey, a month down the road, things are better, and then he can play, right? And so, but his plan right now is to sit out the year. So I don't expect him this year, but there's nothing right now that's kind of in place to prevent him from making a comeback. And we wish him the absolute best. Terrence Hibbler, really, 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 really like him a lot. How much does he play this year? Not sure. I had a chance to watch him play last year against Indianola Gentry. And he was a guy, too, that I thought maybe didn't play every play, but when he decided to exert his influence on a game, he took over a game. He was a game wrecker. And that's the real question, too. And, of course, he's playing every snap in high school. You know, you're not in the rotation. When you're an SEC guy and in the high school ranks, you're expected to play a lot more. And so I think, actually, him being – in a college environment, does he play this year as a freshman? I would hope not, but we may have to play him. But this is a guy that I think could benefit from a redshirt year. But every time that I see him out there on campus, you know, whether like Holmes County Central came and played 7-on-7, when he comes out and support his teammates, you know, and his friends from back home, every time I see him, he looks a little bit bigger and better, right? And so he's clearly embracing the weight room. So I wouldn't totally rule that out. But I think with the guys in front of him, my hope is that they can kind of pick up the slack here and allow us to redshirt here, because I think Terrence Hibbler probably in year two, year three, can be a real dude for us. Now, Ashawn Shepherd was a guy that some of our fans, you know, when he committed to Mississippi State out of East Mississippi Community College, originally a Brandon High School recruit, you know, people kind of like, I don't know, Steve. I don't know about this guy. Well, Buddy Stevens, who was his coach there at Scuba, he believes that Ashawn Shepherd's got a chance to go to the league. Now, he's 6'3", 280, a guy that's going to play on the edge. Not really a stand-up, two-point stance type guy. You know, I guess in some scenarios you could do that. But, you know, he's listed at 280. So probably more of a five tech, I would think. But Buddy Stevens thinks this guy could be one of the great East Mississippi Community College success stories on defense. And he didn't play a ton last year. He played in the rotation. That's kind of his at a junior college, right? I mean, it's a huge roster, so everybody plays. You keep him fresh. And they did play for a NAFL championship last year. But Buddy is really high on A'shaun. And he's got no reason to lie to us, right? I mean, the kid had already signed. The kid was already committed. And he was the guy that committed in the Arnett era and then maintained the commitment because he wanted to be at Mississippi State. And I like people that want to be here. I'm not so keen on people that just kind of land here. I want people that want to be Bulldogs, and A'shaun Shepherd does. And so I'm kind of curious to see what he can do. Had some conversations with Dave Turner, back in the spring, and he was pretty happy with the progress of A'shaun Shepherd. And so, again, when I go up and down this list, I can talk myself into feeling pretty good about the interior because you got numbers there. You got guys that we're highly recruited out of high school, and for one reason or another, this hadn't come together, and maybe the light kind of comes on for them, but I'm just a little bit worried about the edge. Like, I don't, again, you can account for some of that. Brandon Jennings has told us, linebacker Brandon Jennings, if you haven't seen his interview from yesterday, you need to go watch it. Very, very confident kid. He's a guy at times that we're lining up at edge. He's a backer, but he's a guy that's going to walk up there at times, on a third and long situation and just try to maybe get in a seven tech and then kind of outrun a tackle, to kind of open up some blitzing lanes, if not for himself, for somebody else. So there's some things you can do schematically. And when you need that guy to go up there and just be a pass rusher and an obvious passing down, certainly you can walk a backer up there. But I'm just kind of curious to see, with this group, who kind of emerges as being a guy you can count on. You don't have a Jaden Cromedy. Jaden was kind of banged up too. Last year, Jaden had a really good year for us. But who is that guy this year that can go out there and set an edge and force the action back to the middle? Do you have that guy? What do you do? And so I'm just kind of curious to see how things kind of play out in that respect. But I am probably, again, and maybe this isn't fair, but this is just how I feel. This is the group that if they can come around and be decent or decent to good, I think you feel good about winning 6-7 ball games. But if this group has trouble stopping the run and getting penetration, rushing the passer, and you have to sell out and start bringing a lot of backers, 42 Red Dog, something like that, you got to run all that stuff out there at them, then all of a sudden you're putting a lot of stress on a secondary that's kind of learning to play together. And so, again, there's a lot of questions on this defensive group, but to me they all start up front. And again, that's not being critical. That's just kind of calling it for how I see it. I'm a little concerned about this group. And really, I'm concerned about every level of defense. But it all starts there. I think our backers, and we'll talk about them a little bit later in the month, I think our linebackers, the front linebackers, I feel really good about. It's the depth that I'm a little concerned about. And I think Brandon Jennings is going to be good. I think John Lewis is going to be good. I think Stone Blanton is going to be good. And I continue to hear a lot of great things about Stone Blanton. He's a guy that's kind of emerging as a leader within that unit. The secondary, I think we have some real athletes in the secondary. I truly do. And I think that's really the challenge now for Matt Barnes and Corey Bell. It's just kind of sewing this group together into a cohesive unit back there. You've got some guys that play a lot of football. I mean, it's not like you're just walking out there with a bunch of freshmen hoping for the best. I mean, Diego Bromfield's played a lot of football. Bronwyn Lanier is a guy that was good enough for Nick Saban, so he's good enough for me. I hope you feel the same. But he's another name that's been mentioned a lot, too. Is a guy that has really kind of stepped up here. And I think Isaac Smith, my thoughts about him, I do think he is an NFL guy. So the pieces in the secondary are there. I think among the defensive levels, you probably have your best group of athletes in the secondary. And so when you've got a group back there that may need some fine-tuning, I think you feel like, hey, we've got enough numbers here and enough guys here that have snaps under their belt that we can mix and match a little bit. I just don't think you have the freedom to do that up front right now, if that makes sense to you. Those are my feelings. And I may feel differently a month into the season. But I have had some people tell me off the record that the secondary has probably been a little bit better than advertised. And, again, that's a tribute to the young men that are back there and, of course, the coaches that are kind of formulating a plan to win ball games here in the Southeastern Conference. And we'll talk a little more about those guys As we get deeper into the month of August, we still got some time to get through these personnel previews. But I wanted to share my thoughts on the defensive line today. We talked about offensive line, and you know, Coach Levy spoke on Sunday about how good that group is kind of coming together. And I believe that to be the case. But there's also that skeptic in me is I wonder maybe if we're not having success on the offensive line because perhaps we have more question marks on the defensive line. And so what will this offensive line group do when they face a cohesive unit up front? You know, we're kind of mixing and matching, figuring things out there. And again, everything might be okay. But that's, to me, the question mark group as we get ready to go play our first football game at the end of this month against Eastern Kentucky. And hope you guys can be with us. Had some people ask on Facebook today. The homie Fred Harley was even asking about, hey, I need to get a single ticket for that ball game. Guys, you can still buy tickets through hellstate.com/tickets. That's always should be your first option. You know, rather than go jump on Facebook and kind of open yourself up to scammers and things of that nature, always start with the Mississippi State Ticket Office rather than going to third-party vendors where they're going to charge you a lot bigger fee. You know what I'm saying? So start at hellstate.com. Those tickets are always guaranteed. There's no question mark. When we were in Omaha in 2021, Ani and his wife and daughter came and had some tickets from StubHub, and they didn't deliver. We ended up losing that game to Vanderbilt anyway, so maybe that was a blessing in disguise. But to their credit, they did upgrade them on some other tickets for the problem. But when you buy your tickets directly from hellstate.com, you're not depending on anybody else to transfer tickets to you. Yeah, you know what I'm saying? So start there. Whenever you get ready to purchase tickets. All right, time for today's top 10 list is always brought to you by closewithblair.com. That's C-L-O-S-E with Blair, B-L-A-I-R.com. Blair Chandler is my friend, your friend, our collective friend in the mortgage industry. And he's your friend in that industry even before you knew you needed one. That's one of those things like, you know, we talk about LISL instruction booklet. They don't tell you about that. You need a reputable mortgage loan originator in your life. And for many of you, you may never buy a house, and that's kind of unfortunate. For others, you may only buy one. And if you're a person like me, I've moved around a lot. If I began to kind of do the math on this, I guess I've bought three, you know. And every time the process has seemed a little bit easier because of the fact I've been through it before. But there's always something silly that an underwriter is going to ask for. There's always something. And I know we probably have some underwriters that listen to our show. And I love them because I was in the mortgage industry myself for a while. But I'll tell you, some of the things they ask for sometimes can be a little bit, I don't know, challenging, you know. Hey, let's get another comp on this appraisal. Well, if there was already a better comp, it would be on the appraisal, sir. You know, so that's always part of the deal too. But you need somebody with the know-how to help kind of hold your hand through that process. It's Blair Chandler. Visit him at closewithblair.com. Call him direct or text him direct. It's 601-500-2344. Again, 601-500-2344. Several of your fellow Barnyard listeners have closed loans with Blair, including one just last month. And we've had some great, great testimonials from you guys, too, saying, hey, Steve, I never thought I would need to use Close with Blair, but I did, and we've come away very satisfied. Yeah, I've seen the reviews, too. Blair will send them to me and say, hey, this is a Barnyard listener, and look at what they said, you know. Guys, I wouldn't do business with people that I didn't respect, people I didn't trust. I would not validate some charlatan out there, and I wouldn't violate your trust. And so when I tell you that Blair Chandler can take care of you like nobody else, I mean it. 23 years of experience, and whether it's a game day condo, your first home, your second home, a new home, maybe your retirement home, whatever you need to do when it comes to mortgage lending, you need to turn to closewithblair.com. That's our friend Blair Chandler. And he will be thrilled today because Blair is a jam band guy. And I have probably had over the years, I don't know, maybe 25, 30 requests for this band. And I'm not a jam band guy. And listen, it's not that I don't think they're talented. It's just not my jam, right? No pun intended. And so our friend Tara Enlow messaged me the other day and said, hey, since you did so-and-so, now we've got to have widespread panic. And maybe I dislike her better than some of you. You know, maybe. I don't know. But for some reason, when she sent that, I said, yeah, she's probably right. So I want to make Tara happy. We're going to do a widespread panic list today. Now, I have reviewed this list and listened to some of these tracks. And I'm not going to be critical of the band because they have a huge following, I know. But I reached out to the person that I know, that I believe is the biggest widespread panic fan that I know. And it's BJ Cummings. And I believe BJ Cummings has seen this band probably 50 times or more. Oh, no, I'm wrong about that. Here, I'm going to read you his introduction. Because when I reached out to him, he was so incredibly honored. And I said, hey, I've got some requests from Widespread Panic. He's like, dude, I've been asking for years. I know. That's why I'm letting him do the list. So he wanted me to differentiate, do we want studio or do we want live? I said, I think I want studio. So here is what he says from our dear friend, BJ Cummings of Meridian, Mississippi. Let me preface this list by saying Widespread Panic shines brightest in its live shows, so much so that my wife and I have spent decades following them around the country to see their shows. I personally have seen Panic close to 150 times, and my wife is closer to 200. It's a Widespread Panic marriage made in heaven. How about that? BJ says, so putting together a top 10 list of studio songs has had its difficulties. The band can be defined into two categories, with Mikey and post-Mikey, Michael Hauser, one of the founding members and the lingering lead guitarist of the band, passed away from cancer in 2002. Since then, the band had a short stint with Kudzu King's guitarist George McConnell until they found their guy, Jimmy Herring. He has played with the Dead, Allman Brothers Band, Aquarium Rescue Unit. He joined the band permanently in 2006. So with no further ado, here is BJ Cummings' top 10 Widespread Panic songs. Because I want to do these things justice, guys. When we get enough requests, I'm like, you know what? I got to give the people what they want, but I don't want to disappoint anybody, right? Number 10. And the comments are BJ's comments. They're not mine. I want to make sure that they're properly cited. Number 10 is off the first album after Mikey passed away, Ball, released in 2003, Fishing. Fishing. That's your song, Fishing. Number 9. This song really shows off the dark and dirty side of Panic. JB's soulful, growly voice really takes you to the underbelly in this one. Off of their 2015 album, Street Dogs, it's Honky Red. Honky Red. I didn't think that we'd ever have a song called Honky Red on this show, but here we are. All right, number 8, always a fan favorite. Off of their 1994 album, Ain't Life Grand, it's Fishwater. Number 7, this song is perfect to add to any road trip playlist. Mikey's beautiful guitar intro is what I imagine playing while walking into the pearly gates. The song is Pilgrims. Number 6. This Panic classic was recorded in Muscle Shoals for the album Every Day. Side note, Angelina Jolie was the unknown female model depicted on this album's cover. Well, that makes you want to go run out and buy it, right? The song is Diner. That's your number 6 song from Widespread. It's Diner. Number 5. Off of the 1991 album affectionately known as Mom's Kitchen, this tune spins a tale as old as time about a boy and its friendship with his canine companion. It's C. Brown, your number 5 track. Number 4, the top 4 songs, according to BJ, are The Cream of the Crop, and they're all from the 1988 debut album Space Wrangler. Right now, many of you that love Panic are probably saying, yeah, this guy's legit, you know. There are many people that feel that way about Guns N' Roses or Van Halen or Led Zeppelin, right? There are a lot of people that feel that way, that the debut is the strongest album. All right, number 4 is the title track of that album, Space Wrangler. Number 3, this was the song that all the girls loved and really gave Panic their start. It's Coconuts. There's some low-hanging fruit right there with that joke. I'm not going to do it. You can figure it out yourself. Number 2, this song is what drew BJ in 30 years ago. It is my all-time favorite song, says BJ. It's driving song from Widespread Panic. And here's what I would say, though. To be fair, BJ, if this is your all-time favorite, why is it number 2? Right? Number 1, if you ever see Widespread Panic live, and if I do, it'll be an accident, and you hear the opening lyrics, in an easy chair with my boots on, I hope you have your raincoat on because you're about to get wet. A fan tradition is to sling bottled water, beer, or basically any liquid you can quickly get your hands on at the start of the chorus to this panic great, Chili Water. That's your number one widespread panic song, according to our friend, BJ Cummings. He offered a couple of honorable mentions, Hatfield, Aunt Avis, and Jack. And I'm sure they're all related. But that's your top 10 list today. Now, to preface you for Friday's top 10 list, and you never know, like some people contact me. I had somebody one time hit me up and wanted me to do a top 10 Husker Du list, and there's no way I could ever do that. Number one, I also tell you too, sir, I don't think there's a lot of people that there's an audience for that. I just don't. Because I lived through that era too, and it was kind of like college rock and you know, alt rock and kind of in the infancy of alternative. And they weren't really big then. I know among your friends they were, but they didn't have a lot of commercial success even then. But sometimes people will say, hey, Steve, can you do this? And like the widespread thing, I want to show respect to your favorite bands. And many of you, when you offer a suggestion, you'll say, hey, listen, I'd like for you to do it. I want you to pick your top 10. Let's see how we go. And I said, well, you point me in the right direction, right? And so I'll listen. And to be honest with you, some of these bands, I'll listen all day. Like when I'm preparing for the show, I'll just listen to your favorite bands. And some of you have turned me on to some really cool bands and some songs that I really like that I wouldn't have heard otherwise. And so my hope is that kind of spreads, right? And so, again, the fact that we're doing widespread should be a sign to you that we're open, right? We're open to that. We just want to celebrate music here. Again, it's not my thing, but I know many of you are fans because so many of you have requested widespread. So you can thank Tara Enlow for being the kind of the straw that that broke the camel's back to give you a widespread list. And Blair Chandler, you know, he's a big jam band guy too. And so I texted him today. And I said, hey, widespread top 10 today. And he comes back, I can't wait to listen, right? And so, again, thanks to BJ, who is my friend. And he's a lot shorter than me. He is. And But I love following BJ on Facebook. And I'll tell you why I do. Number one, BJ is a friend. He's a bulldog. And he's a guy that's in recovery. And he has got a collection of daughters that will absolutely make you smile. And he shares his family moments on social media a lot. And there's so much trash on social media, right? And so I'm scrolling along, and there's all these people arguing about politics, and they have no idea what they're talking about. And then there's, of course, the AI stuff that pops up. And then all of a sudden, I'll see one of BJ's pictures. You know, him being a great girl dad. And I stop, and I appreciate the picture, and I'm grateful that BJ is my friend. And so I share that with you because I know there's so much out there about social media that I don't like. And the main reason that I even got on Facebook in the first place was not to go, be miseducated about politics, but because let me assure you, that's out there for you, for sure. And it's amazing how some of these people, you know, these bloggers and people like that have built a following without any connections whatsoever. Everything's an op-ed thing, but I digress. But I got on Facebook really because of the fact that it made it easier, like, for me to distribute pictures of my children to my parents and to my siblings. And I wanted to be able to see them, like all these back-to-school pictures and, you know, as my nieces and nephews were growing up. That's what I wanted to see. And it's become something different. And so when I see BJ post, it kind of takes me back to the main reason that I got on Facebook in the first place. And so, BJ, thanks for being a friend. Thanks for your contribution. And thanks for always being a loyal listener to the show. I appreciate it more than you could know. And so, again, if you have a band out there that you're a huge fan of, don't hit me up if you just like a couple songs. If you're not legit, I'm not saying you got to go see a band 150 times to have my respect. But I respect that about the Cummings family, that they've got, you know, they got over 200 shows between them. That's legit. So you ain't got to be the super fan like that. But if you're a band, if you've really got a band that's in your wheelhouse and I haven't done them, I might let you do a list, okay? I might let you do it right here on the show, and we'll give you credit. And you never know, I might say something nice about you too, right? But yeah, to preface you for Friday, this is our plan for Friday. We're going to take the top 10 list, okay? And we're going to take the number one song from the top 10 list, and then I'm going to give you a top 10 of those songs. So the number one song from the list that you all have liked the most, and then it's going to be like a super top 10 list. That's your Friday show. So it's all going to be songs and artists, you know, and you're going to be amazed. We got a couple of country acts in there, too, legendary country acts. And maybe that's the thing, too. What's so funny, too, is like sometimes we'll do a country list, and it gets like nothing. Nothing. And then we'll do, you know, Chris Stapleton or, you know, Waylon Jennings or Hank Williams Jr., whatever, and it just skyrockets. It's amazing. So the legends of country music still do really well. But a lot of this bro country stuff, it just doesn't do well. I'm just telling you for what it is, you know. And listen, I like some rap stuff too, especially the classic stuff. It doesn't do well as I'd hoped. But Roy and I have a lot of fun with this. You know, he was recently promoted to be the assistant to the regional manager of Boneyard Enterprises. So congratulate him on that and maybe send him a fresh idea for a top 10 list. All right, thank you guys so much for your support of the top 10 list. All right, next segment of the show brought to you by Campus Bookmart, a Starkvillian institution. I love Campus Bookmart. I need to get down there and talk to Miss Kathy Brown. I got a great idea that we could partner on. A great idea I think you guys could benefit from. But in the meantime, if you're looking for Mississippi State merchandise, if you're looking for new clothing, looking for decorative items, looking for a housewarming gift, a wedding gift, birthday gift, and you got Bulldogs in your family, you can find everything that your heart desires at Campus Bookmart. Now, if you can't make it to town to see their smiling faces, which would be unfortunate, you can visit them on the World Wide Web at campusbookmart.net. And by being a loyal Boneyard listener, we'll give you a phrase that pays. That is BSR, which stands for Beautiful Steve Robertson. That gets you free shipping on all orders over $75. And the order less than $75 is absolutely incomplete. Mom, I'm going to tell you now. You want to see smiles in the household. You want people to maybe pick up behind themselves and do some things in appreciation for you. Well, you know, maybe let's get some new Mississippi State gear to wear to the Eastern Kentucky game. Go ahead and act now because game day is going to be here before you know it. And again, it's campusbookmart.net, promo code BSR. Okay, we continue our opponent previews. You know, we discuss UMass, and I really mean this, and that's not being negative. That may be the last regular season game we win. Difficult stretch for Mississippi State to close things out. And we'll play Tennessee. We don't play Kentucky, which is unfortunate. I love playing them, especially here. But nevertheless, we're going to get Tennessee. Now, when Josh Heupel was hired, there were a lot of people that kind of panned the hire. I think those people are singing a different tune today. Hype has done a great job at Tennessee, a great job. You remember Hendon Hooker, right? The job he did with him, and they beat Alabama. How phenomenal that was, finally getting off the schneid with Alabama. It was huge, one of the biggest wins in the modern era for Tennessee. And then, of course, they go right up after that and blow it. But let's take a quick look at last year. I really thought Tennessee would challenge in the East. I didn't think they would beat Georgia and win the East and make the SEC title game, but I thought they had a good chance to finish second. And so let's go back and look at the season in review. They opened up in Nashville at Nissan Stadium against Virginia, and they absolutely crushed the Cavaliers 49-13. The following week, Austin Peay kind of hung in there for a while, but again, it's Tennessee winning 30-13. I suspect some gamblers probably lost some money in that deal, because I'm not going to go back and do the research. Maybe you gamblers know. But I suspect the spread was higher than 17 points. But nevertheless, a win. And then they go to Florida and they lose, you know, to a Florida team that wasn't very good. The highlight of the year for Billy Napier and the Gators was beating Heupel in Tennessee. And I think it probably cost Tennessee significantly in the postseason positioning. Disappointing loss. A lot of people in Tennessee were upset. They bounce back the next week and take care of Texas San Antonio 45-14. And that's the thing about this Tennessee team. When they win, they traditionally win big. They get South Carolina to come in, and they take care of them by 3 touchdowns, 41-20. And then a tight game with A&M. And I admit, that game was a lot tighter than I thought it was going to be. They end up winning 20-13. But, you know, a dub's a dub. But, again, A&M obviously ended up firing Jimbo Fisher, you know, after our ball game with them. But there were some games they showed up to play. This is one of them. They just didn't have enough firepower offensively. Tennessee goes to Tuscaloosa the next week and gets beat 34-20. So Nick Saban celebrates one final win over Tennessee. Great game in Lexington. And I remember a lot of people saying, hey, Kentucky is going to get Tennessee. They felt like this Tennessee team was somewhat vulnerable. But Tennessee does win that game 33-27, a bit of a barn burner of a game. Following week, non-conference opponent was UConn. Final non-conference game of the regular season, 59-3. They left no doubt. And they go to Columbia, Missouri. And Missouri, in many respects, was the biggest story in the SEC last year, not named Georgia. Of course, Saban retires and things like that. But I think a lot of people look back and say this Missouri team was way better than we anticipated. And part of that was this rout of Tennessee, 36-7. The Tigers. The next week, Georgia marches into Neyland Stadium and leaves with a 38-10 win. They get Vanderbilt 48-24 and then end up in the Camping World Stadium Cheez-Its Citrus Bowl in Orlando, Florida, and they destroy Iowa 35-0. And of course, Iowa offensively last year was a bit of a joke. So 9-4. That's your final record, including the bowl win. They go 4-4 in the conference. And, again, probably a couple games behind what we projected them to do. But, again, not a bad year. You know, and the problem with hyping those guys is that, you know, they're having to do this kind of in the glory days of Georgia football. I think that's a fair assessment. Now, Tennessee, I think, will be really good again this year. And I think they have a chance to probably reel off a half dozen wins before they play Alabama and Knoxville. And again, I don't think Alabama is going to be quite as good as people expect. And the fact that you got to go to Knoxville against a team that 2 years ago found a way to get it done, we'll see. Well, they open up at basically a noon game on August 31st against UT Chattanooga. That'll be an absolute bloodletting right there. The next week, they'll go to Charlotte, North Carolina, to play NC State. And Dave Doering's done a good job there. This is called the Duke's Mayo Classic. They're going to play at a Bank of America Stadium. I just don't think NC State is going to have the juice or the athletes to compete with Tennessee. We talk about the athleticism, you know, Georgia, Florida, and places like that. Tennessee has a great brand of athlete, too. Kind of gets overshadowed because of the fact they've been playing for second in the East when we still had the East. But I like them to win this game. Then they'll get Kent State the next week in Neyland. That should be a bloodbath as well. The first true road game of the year for Tennessee will be against Oklahoma in Norman. I think Oklahoma is probably middle of the pack this year. When we previewed them, I said, you know, maybe a 7-5 type year. They didn't get any gifts on the schedule. And then one of their home games, obviously, is against Tennessee. And I've heard some people say, I like Oklahoma here. Guys, Josh Heupel played at Oklahoma. All right, he'll be able to prepare his team, and he'll be hype, pardon the pun, to take on the Sooners. And I like Tennessee in that game, too. Now, I'm not going to, you know, count out Oklahoma. Obviously, they're playing at home in the SEC. Typically, a toss-up favors the home team. I just don't know if this technically qualifies as a toss-up. I think Tennessee is a better team than Oklahoma, and I think they'll show it that day. Now, they get a bye week the next week, an open date, and then they go to Arkansas. This Arkansas team, as we discussed here a couple shows ago, they're going to have a tough time this year. I think it's pretty much a foregone conclusion that Sam Pittman's going to be gone at the year's end. The question is, would they let him finish the year? I think, you know, it'll be a competition of who fires first, right? Florida or Arkansas. I think both of those teams are going to struggle. I think Arkansas is going to struggle a little bit more. And I think Tennessee, from an athletic standpoint, is going to be far superior than Arkansas, and they're going to be able to score. I don't think Arkansas can win a track meet with anybody. I think Arkansas is a team that needs to play ball control and kind of prevent those games from getting out of hand. And Tennessee is a team that can march into Northwest Arkansas and put up points. The following week is Florida in Neyland. And you remember last year, we just discussed it, you know, Florida upset Tennessee in Gainesville. Yeah, they're not going to sneak up on them this year. And so Tennessee, in many respects, may actually be a party to the firing sweepstakes about who gets fired first. Remember we used to talk about, you know, when Sylvester Croom would beat somebody, a coach would get croomed. I mean, goodness gracious. I mean, I know it's just October, but you know, could you see Sam Pittman and Billy Napier both get hypeled? Possibly. I like them to win both games. And so now all of a sudden you begin to kind of run through this, and this is not just a cakewalk schedule, but Tennessee could be 6-0 at the halfway point in the season. And I think if we're being fair about this, you know, the one game you probably worry the most about is that trip to Oklahoma, and I just don't think they're going to have enough. I think Tennessee's going to win that game. And so, again, you rattle off UT Chat, NC State, Kent State, Oklahoma, Arkansas, Florida, and then you've got Alabama coming in. And I don't know what to expect from Alabama. I don't think anybody does. And like I've heard and read some stuff, Alabama fans are like, well, you know, if we go 9-3 this year, that's probably okay. I think that's what you say today, but when you get emotionally invested in this thing week to week, I don't think 9-3 is gonna be enough. Now you may get into December and say, well, you know, we won the bowl game, that's a 10-win year. We're back on track. It's just so tough following a legend. And DeBoer can obviously coach, but they've kind of benefited from the fact that the Pac-12 hadn't been very good. And now you're going through this grinder of an SEC schedule. And so in Knoxville, as crazy as it sounds, I think I'm going to take Tennessee. Kentucky, not a great road team under Stoops. I'm not a big Kentucky fan anyway. I think that could be a dub as well. And then we go in there on November 9th. And, guys, I just think we're asking too much. It's going to be a night game under the lights in Knoxville. I'm eager to get there. I've covered in Knoxville before. It's a day game with Joe Moorhead. It wasn't great. A game that we should have won. If we start Garrett Schrader in that game, we'd probably run out of there with a dub. We didn't. I remember you know, Tommy Stevens just kind of freaking out and throwing a couple picks that really gave Tennessee the game. We weren't good. They were worse, and we kind of got them going. It's true. But I think we're asking a lot of ourselves here. I expect Tennessee to win this game. I don't think that's a hot take. I think everybody probably sees that for what it is. Now, the next week, they have to go to Athens, Georgia. I think it's a loss, and I don't think that's a hot take either, even though they're going to probably be undefeated and kind of primed in the playoff discussion. I think Georgia's going to have too much. They'll beat UTEP and Vanderbilt to close out the schedule. And so when I look at this thing, I think it's very possible that Tennessee could be an 11-1 team this year. I think it's a peach of a schedule. And that's the thing you think about Georgia. You throw everything at them, and then you close out with UTEP and Vanderbilt. I mean, goodness gracious, you know. The way it kind of lays out is very advantageous to Tennessee. It truly is. You know, is NC State capable of getting them in Charlotte? Well, yeah, they are. I just don't think they're going to have the horses for four quarters of football with Tennessee. And that's kind of the same way I feel about Oklahoma. And I think Arkansas and Florida, I think by the time they play Arkansas and Florida, both of those teams will be desperate. And desperate teams do things that get themselves beat. You start. It's kind of like all those years when you play Alabama, right? It's like you look up and it's like, man, you know, we played so well and we're only down 10 points. We need to go make something happen. So you do something stupid like fake a punt and then you don't get it. You give them the short field. Next thing you know, it's a three-possession game and you got to start throwing it every time and somebody gets a tip drill or whatever to bring it back. It's a blowout. You know, I think Tennessee is good enough that they don't have to take a lot of chances. They just go out there, run their scheme against Arkansas and Florida and get those games. And, of course, that Alabama-Tennessee game, you just simply never know. But again, this isn't Saint Nick leading the charge anymore. And so, yeah, 10-2 is probably the most probable, but I would not rule out an 11-1 year for Tennessee. Let's kind of look back at last year and kind of see who was who for them. And honestly, I think it's kind of plug and play with Heupel. I really do. Last year, they scored just 132 points a game, only allowed like 20. When you've got a plus 12 differential, that typically means you had a good year. They racked up 284 first downs, allowed 244. They ran for 2,663 yards and then allowed just 1,478. So while they're known as kind of a high-passing offense, they nearly doubled the rushing output of their opponents. That'll typically get it done. Threw for 3,162, allowed 2,879. So total offense, 5,825 yards against 4,357. That's 448 per game for Tennessee and 335 for their opponents. So you're outgaining your opponents by over 100 yards. You're outscoring for plus 10. That's winning football right there. We should all be so lucky. They weren't a great third down team, but they were better than most, but 41%. And on fourth down, they went 7 of 18, so almost 39% there. And so, you know, again, in possession plays, doing a good job. Sacks were a bit of an issue last year. You know, and that's going to be the issue, you know, with a team like them that is very much pass heavy. 41 sacks, 269 yards lost. They only generated 24 sacks, but didn't miss a PAT, and they were very, very good in the red zone. 45 of 54. Would like more touchdowns and field goals. I'm sure Josh will tell you the same. Look at some individual numbers here offensively. Jalen Wright was absolutely a dude for them. He was a 1,000-yard rusher, but they were also a team that kind of did it by committee in some respects. Dylan Sampson ran for 604, Jabari Small, 475, and even Joe Milton, the quarterback involved in the running game, ran for almost 300 yards. And so they like to kind of get it going. It's going to be interesting, you know, with Nico being the guy this year. Of course, he coached him. He was under center in the bowl game, but put up some big numbers. And so it'll be interesting to kind of to see, you know, what happens. It's Lamaleva, is that right? Or Amaleva? But yeah, Joe Milton was a dude last year. 20 touchdowns against 5 interceptions. Threw for right at 65%. And they had, you know, 3 guys who took snaps for them. But it's pretty apparent who the guy's going to be. Squirrel White led them in receptions and in receiving yards last year. 67 grabs for 803. Just a couple touchdowns. Led them in yards per game. Had a little difficulty getting the end zone there. But Ramel Keaton, 6 touchdowns for him, 35 grabs. So nearly half of what White had. And McCallum Castles, 22 grabs. And Jalen Wright even had some 2 out of backfield. But as prolific as they were passing, they didn't really have like that one receiver you look at and said, hey, this is kind of our dude for down the field, right? It's kind of how it all kind of plays out. But Squirrel was just a sophomore last year, 5'10", 165-pound slot guy. So we'll see how he develops this year. Defensively, Elijah Herring led him in tackles last year with 80. And you got to think, too, when you think about snap count, like, you know, that's a thing, too. There's so many teams out there that, you know, number one, have depth, but also, two, they're not on the field as much. Aaron Beasley, a name that people should know, you know, he was a senior last year. Linebacker, 6'1", 225, had 69 tackles. Nice. But, you know, a group that was, you know, was good at times, but other times, you know, when the offense isn't productive, it seemed like they had a tough time on both sides of the football. Let's take a look at the transfer portal. And there's more outgoing transfers than there are incoming transfers. And that's really the case for a lot of teams because you have a lot of walk-ons that go in the portal looking for scholarship opportunities. But Tennessee with 9 incoming transfers and then 15 outgoing transfers. And if you look at the destinations for where they're going to, for many of them, it's kind of a step down to a lower level to get more playing time, right? And so you probably see some guys that were processed out, and that's good roster management. Christian Conyers headed to Coastal Carolina. Cameron Douglas, a defensive lineman, headed to Tennessee State along with Malik Ganaway. Elijah Herring goes to Memphis. Gerald Mincy, an offensive tackle, goes to Kentucky. Wesley Walker, safety, goes to Louisville. Tamarian McDonald goes to Louisville. Danico Slaughter headed to Arkansas. Deshaun Rucker, cornerback, to South Florida. Connor Meadows, an interior offensive lineman, also of Tennessee State, a former walk-on. Addison Nichols, another guy, headed to Arkansas. Mo Clipper headed to Charlotte. Jack Luttrell, safety, headed to Arizona, pardon me. Brandon Turnage, remember him from Lafayette County, went to Ole Miss. Just really didn't do a whole lot of Tennessee. Maybe it'll be different at Ole Miss. Then Warren Burrell goes to Georgia Tech. But at best, lateral moves, but more of those guys are going down a level for more playing time. Now, coming up Tennessee, just 9 incoming transfers. Tommy Went in the third, another slot receiver, moving up from East Tennessee State. That'll be interesting. I'm sure Heupel know how to use him. Miles Kitzelman, tight end from Alabama to Tennessee. Lance Hurd, from offensive tackle from LSU to Tennessee. Jackson Moy, defensive lineman from Stanford to Tennessee. Jalen McMurray from Temple to Tennessee. Jermon McCoy, another cornerback from Oregon State to Tennessee. Holden Stays, a tight end from Notre Dame to Tennessee. Chris Brazil II from Tulane to Tennessee. And Jacoby Thomas, a safety, Middle Tennessee to Tennessee. So a lot of defensive backs for them. And again, you go back and look at those numbers we talked about, you know, the passing numbers that they allow. They're pretty strong against the run, but not so much against the pass. So you're kind of rebuilding the secondary, and maybe that's something that we can exploit. But I think with their ability to run the football, things may be a little bit tough sledding for us. But, yeah, I do like this Tennessee team. I like Josh Heupel. I like his brand of offense. And I think when your transfers are guys that are ascending, it speaks well. And the fact that you didn't have to go and be reliant on double-digit transfers to put a competitive team together, I think it sets up pretty well for Tennessee. You got schedule, roster management. You've got a guy that maybe wasn't your starter last year, but a guy that you're really excited about at quarterback. And you've got some athletes around him, and you bring in some other receivers that maybe provide a little depth in the wide receiving core. So I think Tennessee and Josh Heupel are going to surprise some people this year. And maybe it's just a minor surprise. You know what I'm saying? It's like I think everybody expects them to be good. But I think they could be better than advertised. And I've said that the last 3 years. And they made me look smart 2 years ago. And last year, maybe not so much. And, of course, you know, losing to Kentucky and South and Kentucky and Missouri didn't help. But, you know, working through, you know, the numbers here, you start thinking so much about, you know what's going to happen with this team. I just think Hype is there to stay. I think he will be there for a while. And if you've never made the trip to Knoxville, it is a beautiful campus. I've been up there for baseball a few times, been there for football. We enjoy going, you know. It's probably, you know, not to mention it's an historic venue, right? And they do some cool things up there on game day. Those are the things that I think about, you know, the traditions. And there are a lot of schools that, you know, do some super cool things. But I think when you go to Tennessee, there's just a little bit of mystique about that. You know, there's just one of those deals. You think, you know what, Tennessee should be good. Yeah, when you look at their fan support and the Vol Navy and it's the cool things they do up there on game day. But, you know, they were picked 7th in the league this year by the SEC media. And I think they're better than that. I do. I think they're better than that. And I think the schedule kind of plays into it. And, of course, Georgia, you know, got the lion's share of the votes to win the SEC, as they should have. But I think Tennessee is better than the 7th team in this conference, and I think they'll prove it. And to be honest with you, I think there are some teams that are ranked ahead of them in the preseason that probably have less of a chance to get to the playoff than Tennessee does. So, again, 7th, and I've got them winning double-digit games. And I think they're a team that, provided their quarterback stays healthy, I think they've got an opportunity to have a pretty special year. And we may come back at the end of the year and say, you know what, Steve, you absolutely blew it. But I think Josh Heupel's brand of offense is a very modernized and innovative style of offense. And they run some air raid concepts, but they like to get it done on the ground as well. And they have the quarterback as part of the running component of the offense. And so that sometimes lends itself to injury. You know, it kind of impacts your play calling a little bit. But I think the schedule sets up well for them because most of their road games are winnable and most of their tough games are at home with the exception of Georgia. So I think it's going to be a tough night for us up in Knoxville, but again, we'll revisit it as we get into game week and we'll see how we feel then. There's no telling what these two teams will look like by the time we get together. All right, final segment of the show brought to you by the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. Maybe you've heard about it, maybe you haven't. If you've listened to this show for the last several months, then you're well acquainted with the Stark Vegas Clubhouse, but maybe you haven't stayed there yet, and you're like, you know, Steve, maybe this place is for me, and I would assure you it is. 5 minutes away from the Mississippi State campus, and you know how cool it is to get everybody together under one roof? Because it's not just game day, right? It's family day. It's friend day. And so you're thinking, hey, we'd love to come up there, spend the weekend, be able to watch college football together. You can do your tailgating there, which makes it so much more convenient, right? You can just have a great meal there, go to the ball game, come back, sit around, watch SportsCenter, watch SEC Network, watch some more football. Spend Sunday together too, maybe watch Dak and the Cowboys play if that's your dish, right? But how nice is it to get everybody together? We don't do it enough, and how often do we say that? Oh, we need to get together more often, and then we don't do it. Well, this is your invitation to do that. Whether it be a family weekend, a friend's weekend, college roommates weekend, couples weekend, bachelorette party weekend, bachelor party weekend, or maybe just a chance to celebrate life. 5 bedrooms, 2 baths, that great back porch area, the full-service kitchen, the wet bar, the fire pit area. It's going to be turning cooler sooner rather than later. You may not believe that today, but it's true. We're almost through the summer. Thank goodness. But I would recommend that you give the Stark Vegas Clubhouse an opportunity to serve as your place to stay in the Golden Triangle. And maybe it's a work group. Maybe you're coming up here midweek and you just love Starkville. It's like, hey, we're going to be scattered around town or we're going to be around the Golden Triangle and you need a home base. Bring that work group there rather than going and getting 5 hotel rooms because you never know where Bob and Jim are going to end up. And then at the end of your work day, you want to go have a cold one or whatever. And rather than having to sit in that lobby and have people interloping in your conversation, you can just kick your feet off and relax there in that spacious den there at the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. The renovated clubhouse, the old country club, very easy to find. Visit them on the World Wide Web. Just Google, because Google is your friend, Stark Vegas Clubhouse. Their Facebook page comes up. You can peruse the fine amenities that are available to you there. And then there's going to be some booking options. You can book through Airbnb or VRBO. I don't know, maybe you've got a credit to use, right? But if you want to save some money, I can help you with that. Book through the Evolve website and use promo code BSR10. That's BSR10, as in 10% off your stay. Saving you money again just by listening to the show, the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. Okay. All right, before we get out of here, let's take a little time. And the Clarion Ledger's Dandy Dozen came out today. And listen, that is still a big deal. You know, maybe it doesn't have the luster it once did. We're happy at Gene's Page and 247 Sports to kind of celebrate the Dandy Dozen. I still think it's an amazing thing. Rheon Young, our recruiting reporter, went down to the photo shoot a few days ago, and interviewed some players. We ran some of that content today. We'll do some more tomorrow. But just kind of want to run it down for you. You know, who made the list? And again, you know, the Clarion Ledger, not always been a friend of Mississippi State, but we kind of put that aside when we celebrate the Dandy Dozen, which in many respects is a celebration of high school football within our state. Mario Nash Jr., Mississippi State commitment from Kemper County. He makes the list. Really, really excited for him. Mississippi State commitment. Kamario Taylor, the quarterback out of Noxubee County, makes the list. Not really a surprise there. Tyshawn Willis, Mississippi State commitment, a linebacker from Velma Jackson. Look forward to seeing him this fall. He makes the list. Akilin Deere, a running back out of Quitman, Mississippi. He is a young man, too, that was originally committed to Ole Miss, thought maybe he rushed the process a little bit. A lot of people thought he was going to jump on an Alabama offer. He didn't. He's still working through the process. We do expect him to take an official visit to Mississippi State. You certainly can't give up on him at this point. I think the gap between he and the number two running back in the state is pretty significant. Linebacker Tyler Lockhart, a guy that we expect to commit to Mississippi State at some point during the season. No doubt that he makes this list, and he did. And committed to Auburn. I said then that commitment wouldn't stick. It didn't. They're still on him. But, you know, we absolutely expect him to be a Bulldog when it's all said and done. Caleb Cunningham, probably one of the more obvious picks for the Dandy Dozen, not just this year, but really any year. Just down the road there at Choctaw County. Committed to Alabama. Is expected to take official visits to both Ole Miss and Mississippi State before he's done. The proximity to Alabama is a bit problematic, right? Because we knew he didn't want to go far from home, but it's not that far over to Tuscaloosa. And so I don't expect anything to change with him until much later in the process, if at all, right? Deuce Knight, a quarterback down at George County, is committed to Notre Dame. I know that Auburn is still on him. Deuce is a guy that camped at Mississippi State a couple years ago, built his profile page out. He's a very, very talented young man. Not surprised at all that he's got a string of Power 5 offers. Andrew Maddox, an Ole Miss commitment from Oak Grove defensive lineman. No surprise at all that he makes the list. He is a guy, too, that I really think has a high ceiling. You'd have loved for him to come to Mississippi State. But Ole Miss, really good job of recruiting, got his brother last year to commit, and I don't think he's a quarterback on the college level. But I don't necessarily consider this a calf-cow deal, but Andrew Maddox, an absolute stud. Kevin Otis, a guy that we feel is a Mississippi State lean, also makes the list. Probably a guy that he said back in June he was going to probably commit in August, and then he's talking about taking some visits. It may actually come later. There's some discussion he may do it. Game week of his, you know, the end of August, the first part of September. Still believe Mississippi State's a team to beat there. Offensive lineman Tyler Miller out of Laurel High School. Really like him a lot. There are some people close to him that you really feel like he needs to leave the state to accomplish his goals. He's committed to LSU. And as of now, I expect that to stick. You know, he's taken visits to Ole Miss and Mississippi State. I certainly don't expect State and Ole Miss to give up on him. And I know right after the visit to Mississippi State, there was some chatter that, you know, Mississippi State had made up some ground there. I still think that's the case, but I think you got to go out there and perform well offensively this year to kind of give yourself a chance. But as of now, I expect that commitment to remain with LSU. Cortez Thomas, a guy who was a Mississippi State lean, kind of a surprise the week of July 4th. He announces a commitment to Ole Miss, and we were able to kind of share that information with Dave Johnson, our Ole Miss publisher, and give him the opportunity to break that news. The bottom line is this: we just want to be right, right? And throughout the process, we felt like it was going to be Mississippi State, and then at the very end, he shares with me it's going to be Ole Miss. I could have ran out and changed my crystal ball, but I didn't want to steal the young man's thunder and give him the opportunity to make his own commitment. And he commits to the Rebels. That one's not over, but you know, he's already chosen Ole Miss for one reason or another, right? And so you got to always consider that aspect of it. He had a chance to commit to Mississippi State, elected not to, and committed to Ole Miss. Same thing for Jacoby Hobson. Really like him, linebacker, you know, committed to Ole Miss early. Not a big surprise there. Horn Lake has some Ole Miss connections in it. And Horn Lake has really come on. In the last decade or so, they used to just kind of be, you know, kind of the leftovers in DeSoto County. But Horn Lake has come on, won a state championship. They've done some big things there. Radar Jones, of course, part of our program here at Mississippi State. And Janoris Hobson, former Mississippi State receiver, headed to Ole Miss too. And so that's, again, good recruiting. I mean, you got to tip your cap when that's part of the deal. You get the big brother on campus and get him committed. And then more times than not, you get the younger brother, and you hope that trend continues to hold true with Tyler Lockhart, his brother TJ here now at Mississippi State. Saw TJ this morning. And speaking of that, you know, Winona players, Fat Clark is a guy in drills, and the few times that we've been able to watch practice, kind of stood out to me. It's like, who is Zero? Where did that guy come from? Oh, it's Fat Clark. Yeah, and listen, uber productive player on the high school level. And again, with TJ and Fat both here, I think, you know, Tyler, of course, is going to spend a lot of time on campus, come out, hang out with the guys. You kind of enjoy some football weekends, and I think that's only going to make it easier for Mississippi State to kind of get him locked up. But again, congratulations to everybody that made it, and congratulations to those that didn't, that were in contention. They did the photo shoot down at Ridgeland High School, and it's a good thing. I mean, it is. And it's probably one of the things that Clarion Ledger does, you know, really, really well. And it's one of those things that every high school player, when they're freshmen, they kind of dream and aspire one day of being selected as one of the top 12 senior football players in the state of Mississippi. And we listen, and that's the thing that we did. Of course, Nathan Purvis, our graphics guy, we planned all this stuff out. We wanted to help these young men celebrate this accomplishment no matter where they're headed to college, because we are Mississippians. And we have no ill will against any of these young players, even those that choose to play for our rival. To me, that doesn't diminish their talent. There's sometimes they just like the other guys better. And that's difficult for people to comprehend, right? Because we've lived so long, we've thought of a litany of reasons why you shouldn't go to Ole Miss. But when you're a young man in this state, and maybe perhaps you don't, you grow up with an allegiance to either of those schools, you know, it becomes about relationships. And so there's a lot of that that kind of goes on, you know. And so there are some guys out there that are Mississippi State guys, that are some that are Ole Miss guys, and that's just kind of how life works. You know, it's the same thing over at Alabama and Auburn, you know. There's a lot of people that have a connection to Mississippi State, you know, because their dad played here, or their grandfather played here, or they had a favorite uncle that played here, or a neighbor, or their high school coach played here. And we got a lot of high school coaches in the state of Mississippi with a Mississippi State degree. So a lot of those guys kind of grow up coming to camps here. And so it seems very, very normal for them to be Bulldogs. But yeah, we got some work to do on the recruiting trail. Got 17 commitments now. Got some room to work with, and we'll kind of see how things play out. But it could be a scenario where State kind of wins that Andy doesn't when it's all said and done. We'll go back and revisit that on signing day and see how well State did when did Andy doesn't players. But I think, you know, State and Ole Miss will both get their share. And again, there's some in-state players that, you know, State is still on that are very highly recruited. And you've got a real opportunity to get them in the boat. And that was the thing, too. And we thought, hey, you know, we get Cortez Thomas, get Tyler Lockhart, get Kevin Otis. Those are three more four-stars. May push this class into the top 20. And now Cortez is committed to Ole Miss, and you know, Kevin Otis is still kind of delaying things a little bit. And again, I think Tyler Lockhart is one you can count on. And I felt that way even after he committed to Auburn. But you know, the reality of this is it is a very fluid process. And in order for State to have a strong close in recruiting, you're going to have to go out there and demonstrate what you can do on the football field. I think we've done all the talking we can do. Now it's time for us to go out there and kind of do the walking. You know, Caleb Cunningham, if we're going to flip him, and that's going to be a tall task, you're going to have to go out there and show him that this is a very wide receiver friendly offense, and there's an offense that's capable of getting him to the National Football League, because that's his end goal, right? I want to go somewhere, I can catch a lot of balls, play in meaningful games, and then take my talents to the National Football League. And it's been a long time since we've had a receiver drafted. You know, even in the air raid. I mean, you'd think Mekhi Polk, one of the top receivers in the country that year, didn't get drafted. You know, and Steve Spurrier Jr. said as much. He needed to come back. And there were a lot of people that were very critical of Steve Spurrier Jr. and said, hey, we should support this. You know, sometimes being supportive means being honest. You know, if you truly want what's best for the kid, you got to be honest. It can't be like, hey, we're going to support whatever decision you make. You got to live with it. But you got to be honest with people. And it's amazing how in America these days, honesty has gone out of style. Like, we're so worried about hurting people's feelings. Well, I'm not one of those people. My wife wishes I was at times, not that I hurt her feelings, but, you know, I just tell people the truth. And as a coach, you have to tell people the truth. That's probably out, you know, job one is safety, right? I'm going to give a young man a safe environment in which to work out and develop and play a sport. That's job number one. But job number two is honesty. You got to be honest with people. And I think that's the case on a recruiting trail too. Sometimes you could be too honest, right? But the way all this stuff works, you know, I think about if I can't be honest with you throughout the recruiting relationship, I can't be honest with you as a coach because I'm not going to walk around eggshells around you. You know, I'm going to give you the expectation, say this is what we expect. This is how we go about it. This is the level of accountability that we have. And if you don't accept those foundational standards, you're better off going somewhere else. And there are a lot of people out there that want to be lied to. There are a lot of people that they want somebody to constantly tell them how great they are. And you know, I didn't grow up in that. I don't know about you, but I didn't. And I'll tell you this, most of the people around me that grew up with all that, with somebody always blowing smoke up their skirt, they haven't accomplished a whole lot in life because life has a way of kind of reminding you that, you know what, you're not quite as special as you think. You got to work hard, right? And there are a lot of people today, and I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this and you know have all these platitudes and things of that nature, but here's the thing that I have learned. I've been working in recovery a long time and done a lot when I can to help other people kind of spread a sojourner's truth about what it means to be sober and how it what it takes to get sober. And even there's things, you know, even in my working relationships, there are so many people out there that would prefer that I tell them what they want to hear instead of what they need to hear. They would rather me kind of be a co-conspirator in a fraud than to tell them the truth. You know, and I tell people a lot of times that are young in recovery, the chances of you making it are not great. Especially if you don't take the steps needed. And it's the same way in sports. You know, once you get there, you've accomplished nothing. All you've done is kind of proven that you belong to have that opportunity. But if you don't go in there and work hard, if you feel like that you've arrived, you're going to be in a transfer portal, and more times than not, it might even be your decision. And so I think it's important to be honest. You know, I work a program of rigorous honesty. That's one of those you know, sayings that we have in the recovery community. And I expect people around me to be honest. And that's one of the things you want to talk about, like the things that bother me. I cannot stand somebody lie to me. I absolutely cannot stand it. To me, it is such a betrayal because, like, I love people with all that I have, whether it be relationships, friendships, family stuff. I love them with all that I have. And I think there is an expectation that I can trust them, right? That I should not ever have to question their motives, question their actions. I should absolutely be able to trust them. I think that is a trade-off. For the amount of love that you give somebody, there has to be a measure of trust. And it should be almost unconditional. And so when you love somebody and you give them all that you have and then they betray you, maybe betray a confidence, or maybe they may tell you something that proves to be untrue or it's a lie by omission, you know, those are the things that probably bothers me more than anything in the world when somebody is dishonest with me, whether it be somebody that I love or somebody that I work with or somebody that I know that I depend on, it's a friend. And all of a sudden, you know, it's like, well, hey, well, I didn't tell you this, but, you know, especially when you have to find out yourself, right? It'd be one thing, like, if somebody screws up and they come to you and say, you know what, hey, I need to level with you. I kind of screwed up here, and here's the situation, and I'm willing to take whatever consequences that I got, right? But I can't, it's so funny, too. It's like, one of the things that I've learned about that, and we're going to move on from this because we got to get out of here. It's so interesting to me. The people that tell you, hey, let's stop living in the past are the people that screwed up in the past, right? It's never that person. Hey, let's, you know, listen, hey, you may have broken my heart. You may have stabbed me in the back. And while I will kind of move on from it, I'm never going to forget it because it's self-preservation. Now, I may love you again, and I may put myself in a situation where you can hurt me again, but I'm going to heal on my own timeline. I'm not going to have you rush me along. And if I got questions about stuff, things you hid from me, I'm going to ask you. And if you don't answer them successfully, then we'll just terminate the relationship. You know, that's how I feel about it. And I think in many respects, that's one thing that's missing not just in life, but in sports. You know, it's one of the things Mike Leach and I talked about. I said, Coach, do you feel like maybe you can't coach guys as hard as you did or as honestly as you did because of the portal? And Mike was like, no, I'm not going to change the way I coach. And if they don't like it, they can get in the portal. Because we're going to surround ourselves with good actors and people of integrity. And so I think nowadays there are a lot of people out there, they'll tell you whatever you want to hear to get you to go along with something. And I don't think that's worth anything. That's just my feeling on it. And so I don't want to mean to preach too much, and we're not going to pass around an offering plate. If we did, we'd give that money to Bulldog Initiative. We're not going to hung just as I am and have an altar call or anything like that. But I think in order to have integrity in recruiting and in coaching relationships and personal relationships, you yourself have to be an honest person, and you have to have an expectation that other people are going to meet you right where you are in that respect. But if you go out there and you lie to people and you run around on people, don't be surprised when you get it back. I'm a firm believer in reaping what you sow. Those are just my attitudes about it. You may disagree. You're welcome to live your life as you choose. You don't need my approval. But I love the fact that there's not people out there that have things they can hold over my head. You know what I mean? Right? Because that's the most difficult part. When you've done something really, really foolish or stupid and somebody else knows about it, you always kind of got to walk around and you got to kind of mend that relationship a little bit, even if it's one you got to get away from, just because of the fact you're like, hey, these people have some damning information or evidence about me, or they've got a story or rumor to share about me. I'm just not going to live that way. And I don't think coaches want to live that way either. You know, I got to go out there and do something stupid to get you to come play here. Then chances are when it's fourth and goal and the one in Tuscaloosa, I'm not going to be able to count on you because you've already proven to be a person with no character. Let's get out of here. If you hadn't done so, go to DutyNobleBook.com, DutyNobleBook.com, and you can pre-order the new book, The Dude. We'll have a release date soon. I'm sure it's going to be late September, maybe early October. I'm just telling you, it's supposed to be about 6 weeks, but I'm just letting you know. Once we get it released, it'll let you know. If you hadn't pre-ordered yet, you can. All copies ordered through the website will be signed, and all my other sports titles are there too, though even though there are limited quantities left of Villains and Alpha Dogs, if you haven't completed your collection, you should. Because we're going to write another book probably next year. We'll see how things go. But nevertheless, hope you guys have a great midweek, and we'll be back with you on Friday. My goal is to record the Friday show early on Friday so you've got the whole workday on Friday to enjoy that. Got a lot going on that day, but we're going to do our best to, you know, either we record it Thursday night or get up Friday morning and do it fairly early. But until next time, let's all live our lives in a way we make more friends than enemies, and people can see a difference in the way we live.